chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven the middle of it. Grass makes heaven the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We have with us this evening David Butler. He's such an amazing person, should I say again. Name is David Butler. And he lectures, like I said, at Cork, University of Cork, in historical geography. And he has quite a bit to say, but he has a very insightful grasp of the Butler family and the history, and the history of Ireland. Ireland has had a very tumultuous type of history, and they even had a civil war in the 20s, 1922 to 23. And I believe the civil war had to do with, there was two groups. One wanted to go ahead and make a deal with Great Britain and give Northern Ireland to Great Britain. The other one wanted to unify all of Ireland together, the whole island. And in the end, the group that wanted to give away Northern Ireland to the British as a compromised situation won out in the Civil War. But that was very, very divisive for Ireland at the time. And I believe the Butler family was on the side of go ahead and make a compromise, giving Northern Ireland to the Brits. But anyway, David Butler is attending now from August the 18th to August the 23rd, 2015. Every 3 years, the Butler Society holds what they call a Butler Rally, and that's in Kilkenny, Ireland, which is south southeast of Dublin. And I was over there in the 2006, and some friends of mine, Boxcar Preachers, were playing down on the coast. I went down and visited them, and that was quite a surprise for them at the time. But that's just another story. But what they had there, when I went over in 2006, hundreds of butlers from all over the world. We have Brazilian butlers, Australian, New Zealand. Their American contingency is probably the largest group that attends this particular, what they call Butler Rally. We would think of it as a butler reunion, and that's basically what it is. They call it rally, you know. That's the Irish or the British influence in these kind of get-togethers. But we had a long history. The Butler family had a long history at Kilkenny. Actually, they occupied the Butler family, the titled Butler family, the titled ones, occupied Kilkenny Castle for well over 586 years. They even had to make a deal with Oliver Cromwell for a while. I think he occupied several of the castles in the area, and one of them was the Butler Castle, which is Kilkenny Castle. In about 1967, the family sold it for 50 Irish pounds to the Irish government, and since then it's been a historical type of you know, property for the Irish government, and it's one of the most highly visited. Millions of people go there every year, tourists, to see Kilkenny Castle, one of the largest castles in Ireland. It has the north wall missing because of one of the attacks way, way back, and they never rebuilt. It's undergone quite a few different renovations and changes over hundreds of years. The St. Canice Church is also in Kilkenny, and it's well over 600 years old or older. I think he was saying earlier, when we recorded this, with David, that's 800 years old or so. But that is the second largest cathedral in all of Ireland. And I got stuck in my car on the back side of it and barely got out of there, but I did get out. But we had, what happens is that we usually go into Tuesday, on a Tuesday, to the castle, Kilkenny Castle. Everybody signs in and registers. We've all paid in advance to attend and so forth. And then, they have drinks. And then the next day it begins a series of different events, of different tours, of different properties and so forth and so on. But it's quite a get together. And I met two marvelous, very beautiful butlers, Bill Butler and Pat Butler. They're from England. They're English butlers. And, we chummed around a lot. We got to know each other fairly well. And I correspond with them on the internet, email quite frequently. But anyway, they're going to send me some photographs to put up on this site. I don't have those photographs up now. I do have a few photographs that David Butler did send me. We'll have those up also. But, it's amazing the Butler family. They have a man from the Latter-day Saints, from the Mormon Church there, doing DNA samples. So they're really interested in the Butler line itself. You see what I mean? And so, I deferred not to do that when I was over there in 2006. They had a DNA, Mormon man there at the time. But anyway, they're very interested in the Butler family and tracing it back with this DNA. So it's awful interesting, to go there, to be in the castle and to be with hundreds of other butlers that have come in from Germany and from Spain. And we have some from of course, England, Scotland, Wales, and then we have some from Ireland, quite a few from Ireland, and then a large contingency from the United States. To be there with all those butlers is just quite amazing. St. Canice Cathedral really impressed me more than anything that we did when I was over there in 2006. And we went in there. We end. The Butler rally ends on a Sunday, and what happens is we get up early, we have coffee early in the morning, then we travel over there to the St. Canice Church, and then we have a service, and it's not only the Butlers, it's whoever is our members also, but there's usually several hundred, into the hundreds of Butlers at that service, which makes it very, very special for the Butler family. They have beautiful stained glass windows. They've renovated a new organ in there and really brought it up, modernized it and so forth. The people are just very gracious. The people in Ireland I've found to be the most down-to-earth and most friendly people that I've visited in any country that I've been in throughout the world. They're just very warm people, you know. And in Dublin is quite a city with a lot of structures and very old buildings and so forth. And it's just amazing to be in Ireland, to be in Dublin, to be in Kilkenny. And one thing I didn't make that clear in our interview with David, but you'll hear that coming up in just a couple of minutes, two or three minutes here, is that there were these tall walls all over Kilkenny. I was wondering, they're like 10 feet tall. And I was wondering, and then I found out later on when I went to London and came back through to fly back out, back to New York, and back to Austin, I found out that I was there through Dublin on a Sunday, and they had the national hurling, championships that day. And Kilkenny is one of the leading national winners of that hurling. And hurling is the fastest field sport in the world. And it has a ball that if it hits you in the head, it could kill you. And so to protect the children in the area of Kilkenny, they built these giant walls around their practice fields. And so that's just another thing about Ireland is hurling. I mean, hurling is, you have a paddle. You put the ball on the end of the paddle to run. It has to be on the paddle before you can advance it by running. You can throw it to other players. You can throw it through the goal. If you throw it through the upright goal, it's 1 point. If you run it through or throw it through the bottom part of the goal, it's 3 points. And then at the end of the day, it just goes on and on. It's a running sport. So it's very, very strenuous and it's fast. You can actually pick up lift up that ball off the paddle and into the air and then hit it to someone downfield. You could, you'll see them hit it all the way downfield. Someone else will catch it, put it on the paddle, start running. There'll be people trying to knock it off that paddle. So you can do that. It's not prohibited from just hitting the other man's, paddle, say, and knocking that and then grabbing that ball. So it's a pretty rough, sport. Again, I want to thank, David, Butler. David J. Butler, professor there, he lectures at University of Cork in historical geography and other historical types of courses. And I want to thank him very much for taking the time for the interview. And I just want to give you a glimpse where the Butlers are actually Norman, out of Normandy. When I speak German, I speak German with a French accent. I don't know why. Maybe my genes, both a university professor that taught me over in Erlangen, German, when I was there, stationed there in the army. He said that. I sat down with a group of Germans. They said the same thing. So, maybe that goes back to the genes, but, it's something else, isn't it? But anyway, we're Normans. We came to England in 1066 with William the Conqueror, and we took England, and then a contingency of us went over to Ireland and at Kilkenny, and we stayed there for hundreds of years. You know, we had a presence in Ireland. One of the two leading families of Ireland were the Fitzgeralds and the Butlers. Again, I want to thank you for listening, and coming up next is David Butler, and we want to thank him for being with us this second hour. So tune in every Saturday night, 7 to 9, and listen to us. And, well, we thank you for your support. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I've got one of the finest guests we're ever going to have from Kilkenny, Ireland. David Butler, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Boy, I tell you what, I've recently picked up an interview. You're presently at the Butler Rally in Kilkenny, Ireland. Is that correct?
That's right, yes. I'm currently in Butler House, which is a Georgian townhouse or dower house for the retired or widowed Duchess of Ormond. In the past, the house was built about, I guess, the 1790s, and it was used by the family until the late 19th century, and then it was converted into merchant residence, and in the 20th century became derelict and was latterly converted into a quite a nice guest house. And that's where I am staying for the duration of the rally, which commenced on Tuesday and ends on Sunday.
Okay, now some of the activities are taking place in Kilkenny Castle. Tell us a little bit about some of the history on Kilkenny Castle.
Well, the castle was originally built as part of the Anglo-Norman conquest in the early 13th century, in the 1200s, not by the Butler family, actually, but by a man called William Marshall. The Butlers bought the castle and came into residence in 1391, and they lived in Kilkenny Castle, with a few exceptions, right through until 1935, but they did retain ownership until 1967. However, the contents of the castle was dispersed in the 30s, and the castle was basically kept going on a very occasional basis, but the family was hardly ever there anymore. And one of the situations that hit the family was that the heir, the sole male heir, Anthony Viscount Thurles, was killed during the Second World War in action, and that left his only sister as heir general. And the title went sideways to her uncle, who had two daughters, and the title went sideways again to his brother, who had two daughters, and then the title died out. But thankfully, one of these Marquesses of Ormond in 1967 saw what was going to be happening in another generation, with the title going to his brother, who also had no heirs, and he decided to give the Kilkenny Castle to the people of Kilkenny for the sum of £50. And not only that, but purchased a considerable number of acres of parkland adjoining the castle, which was no longer part of the castle property, but was originally part of the castle property or domain, and with his own money, and presented that to the people of Kilkenny. And that happened in, I believe it was August 1967, and that became the first Rally of Butlers. Now, it was a very large gathering, something like 450 members of the family from 18 or 20 different countries, not all of the very same family as in close cousins, but often people of everything from regular butlers right through to aristocratic and landed gentry types, but not all from the Kilkenny Castle branch, but from places as diverse as Sweden and Spain, and from South America and North America, and from Australia, New Zealand, Malta, all places. And that started the first Butler Rally. And then they decided that the Butler Society should be set up to keep the branches of the family together and to promote neighbourliness and friendliness and networking, and that every 3 years that there would be an international rally or gathering. And that has happened every 3 years from 1967 right through to now. So I believe this is our 17th triennial International Butler Rally. And in between the rallies, we publish a journal, which I edit, and we have some newsletters and some lesser gatherings or events. And now we are on the cusp of our 50th year.
Boy, I tell you what, you've done a lot there to support the Butler Society, and we want to thank you for all your hard work and everything. And you're presently teaching school, is that right?
That's right. Go ahead. This time of year, we're still on recess. From mid to late September, depending on the course. Some of my courses are day courses, and some are evening courses. The college will start back, so I guess I've got another couple of weeks free.
Right. I have. I'm going to put up your biography on my site. I have it up there now, in fact. And you have quite a distinguished record there. And also, how does St. Canis Cathedral tie into the Butlers? And what's a little history on St. Canis?
They actually pronounce it Canis over here.
Oh, Canis. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
St. Canis. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yes. It's basically the place, the burial place of most of the Butlers of Ormond, and perhaps some of the other Kilkenny branches too. It's the medieval cathedral of Kilkenny, located outside the city walls. Very fine building it is too. I think I'm right in saying it's the second largest church of any denomination on the island of Ireland after St. Patrick's Episcopal Cathedral in Dublin, which is the national cathedral of the Episcopal Church. St. Canis' Cathedral probably has very ancient roots. I don't have the dates to hand, but certainly the existing building would be 1100s, 1200s with later additions. But it's a cruciform structure. It's got a monastic round tower next to it, which obviously indicates the early origins, early Christian origins of the site. It's got a very handsome appearance. It's got the old traditional triple form Irish battlements down either side. And it's had quite a lot of good quality conservation work done in recent years, thankfully, so that it's pretty weatherproof, waterproof, and in good order. And we will have, as we always do, on Sunday morning, the Butler family service there at 11:15. It had its roots, of course, in the early Celtic traditions, which subsequently came under the control of Rome as a Roman Catholic cathedral. So originally it would have been an independent Celtic Christian site, and then from the 11 to the 1500s it was Roman Catholic, and then from the 1530s onwards it has been Episcopalian.
Right. To hold the Butler title, you have to be a member of the Anglican Church or the Church of Ireland. Is that correct?
No, but there would be numbers of the Butlers that became Episcopalian, and there would be numbers of the family that remained Roman Catholic, and there would have been yet more branches that oscillated between one and the other, depending on which way the wind was blowing. In fact, we were talking about that just this afternoon in one of the lectures.
Okay. Let me ask you this. During the drive for Irish independence, how did the Butler family handle themselves? Did they hide out some of the revolutionaries or what? Well, tell us a little bit of that history.
Well, it depended, I guess, on which branch of the family you were looking at, but I'll mention, too, the Kilkenny Ormonds and the Dunboyne's. the Kilkenny Ormonds at the time. I think it was the son and heir, the Earl and Countess of Ossory, who were the son and daughter-in-law of the Marquess and Marchioness of Ormond, that were in residence at the time of the Civil War in 1922-23. And I know that the castle was laid siege to, but they didn't obtain entry, as far as I know. And there were some shots fired and some damage done, but nothing that wasn't repairable. I know that there was a claim for damages lodged with the state. I'm not sure what level of compensation was awarded, but some was. And I guess it was probably the beginning of things changing a little. The family, however, was well regarded in Kilkenny, and being Episcopalian or Roman Catholic didn't really matter once you were a good landlord to your tenants, and they seemed to have been, and they were very supportive of local causes and charities, and certainly very good employers, and that's what mattered. Over on the west coast, then, the Dunboyne's, who had in previous generations lived in Tipperary and in Dunboyne, County Meath, were, by the mid-19th century, they had relocated to Nepaul Castle, which is quite close to Shannon Airport, and is one of the three Bunratty Castle banquet-type castles that are now open to the general public, where you can have a medieval banquet. The Dunboynes lived there and owned it from, I guess, the mid-1800s until the 1920s. And the current Lord Dunboyne's grandfather, Paddy Dunboyne, who was a co-founder of the Butler Society and our genealogist for years, he was born in Ireland pre-1922. He was quite young in 1922. I want to say something like 6 or 7 years of age. And he and his slightly older or slightly younger sister, in the middle of the Civil War unrest, decided that they needed to walk to, I think it was Dublin or something like that, or some other cousin's home or something like that. And the Irish Republican Army at the time saw them on the side of the road, headed some distance away from the castle, maybe half a mile, and brought them home to their parents, which you would think was would be seen in warm terms, but it so unnerved the parents as to the possibilities of what was coming next that they upped and out to the United Kingdom and never came back to reside in Ireland, and the family live in the south of England ever since.
Right.
Now, there was no actual force or violence or anything, but I think that the whole scenario was just so uneasy and unpredictable.
When Oliver Cromwell invaded Ireland, did he not possess, or was he in possession of Kilkenny Castle for a while?
I guess so. I haven't got the exact period of that, but I think that the Cromwellians did hold pretty much every place in the end. Kilkenny, however, was the headquarters of the Catholic run Confederation of Kilkenny, as it was called. That was an area of Ireland that was controlled by the Catholics from 1642 to 1649. After Ireland's first island-wide sectarian rebellion of 1641-42 had pitted Catholic against Protestant for the first time, beginning, surprise, surprise, in Northern Ireland, where in an area where things were roughly 50-50 around Armagh, Portadown to be exact, and Kilkenny became the capital of this confederacy, because both Dublin and Cork and all the other substantial towns and cities were in government hands. And Kilkenny had its own constitution and statutes and so on governing it for that seven-year period. So I guess eventually it must have fallen, but certainly other Butler castles like Caher in South Tipperary, Oliver Cromwell came before them, and he gave very favourable terms. He wrote a letter to the garrison, he did this on several occasions, and he offered them the opportunity to surrender and depart with their guns and a round of ammunition and all their flags flying and all their armoury and goods and chattels with them, horses and carts and so on, and that they could march off into the sunset without a finger being laid on them and their dignity intact, if they would agree to do it pronto and hand over without any undue delay and without any further shots being fired. And that opportunity was taken in Caher and several other places. In fact, you could nearly say that most of the well-preserved medieval buildings of Ireland of any defensive note, such as Ker Castle, owe their relatively intact status to their pragmatism in that period.
Right. That was very wise at that time. I was over there at the Butler Rally in 2006, and I met you and a lot of the other wonderful Butler family. And then I left there after the rally, and I went to London for a week. Well, at the Westminster Abbey, there was a Richard Butler buried in the North Chapel area where the Air Chapel is.
Okay.
And so I asked some of the tour guides to show me that particular location. And in that vault that Richard Butler is buried is where Oliver Cromwell was pulled out of.
Really?
Yes, uh-huh. And none of the tour guides knew that at the time. But we read further down in there, you know, that he had been buried in Westminster Abbey in the very vault that he was eventually pulled out of, I guess, because of... whatever, he came out of disfavor, and then a Richard Butler was put in his place.
Goodness, I didn't know about that.
And
I know that Oliver Cromwell is held in some regard still in the United Kingdom, and he's, I wouldn't say he has been rehabilitated in the Irish sense, far
right.
from it, but there is more scholarship going into questioning the sources of that time, and there is an investigation going on in some. A couple of books that have been published in the last 10 years that have looked at the suspiciously round figures associated with his massacres. And sometimes they exceeded the population, known population of the town at that time.
Right.
So, you know, there's nothing like the victor writes history, as they say.
Yes, the victor do write history, don't they? Well, that's a good point to make, David Butler. You know, when I was driving around Kilkenny, I had a rent car, budget or whatever, and I saw these gigantically tall walls, 10 feet tall or whatever, and I was wondering what's behind those walls. And later on, when I was leaving Dublin, I left on a Sunday, or going back to the United States on a Monday, actually, but I was there on a Sunday, and it happened to be the National Hurling Championship on that day.
Mm.
And I understand that... that Kilkenny has had the national championship, has won the national championship a number of times.
Oh, yes, yes. Kilkenny and Tipperary would be major counties very often, and with Cork and Galway, those top four, they almost have it tied up, really. The others don't get much of a look in. But then there are other counties that are very well got at Gaelic football, for example, Dublin and Kerry, and some of the Northern Ireland counties too. But it's fair to say that there's only really a couple of the 32 counties that are exceptionally good at one or the other, and it's nearly always a tie-up between one or other of those, such that they've tried to weigh things in favor of the weaker counties.
Right. Now, I asked Bill and Pat to say hello to you over there. I got to be friendly with them when I was over there in 2006, and I really appreciate you sending me those photographs of some of the meetings and so on, some of the locations there. I'm adding those to the site as
good,
we speak.
Good.
And I've been on the air nearly 9 years with thesecrettruth.com, and we cover a wide range of different issues and so forth. And I thought, well, this time, you being there and you being a historian like you are, geography, and then also board of directors, and then also you keep up on the society itself. And it's just a wonderful group of people, and you really become closer over the years with the Butler family, have you not?
Yes, it's nice to get to know other branches instead of just your own immediate family and cousins and meeting people from overseas. I guess I was always used to the international public almost 40 years ago now. My mom started a guest house in our home in Tipperary, so I would have grown up with particularly North Americans visiting, but also continental Europeans. But there wouldn't have been that many of them would have had the surname Butler or any understanding of the Butler history. But in the early 1980s, I believe it was, whether Mum heard something on radio or saw something on newspaper or maybe just researched it, because obviously we're long before the usual channels of social media and internet, she joined the Butler Society about 1982. And we didn't get to the rally because it was always on at our busy time
sure.
in late August, early September for some years, but eventually they did decide to do something in a different time of the year for Irish butlers, and we got to a few of those gatherings and got to know particularly the late Melusina Lennox Cunningham, who was a broadcaster and travel writer and secretary of the Butler Society for almost my entire lifetime, from the mid-1970s up until her death in 2011. And she was pretty much a personification of the Butler Society almost. Now, her demise has led to some committee restructuring, which is thankfully now almost finalized. And we are looking at how to promote the society and have more than just a rally once every 3 years and a journal halfway between and the occasional newsletter, which is at present, and to go back to the original tradition of having more or less annual mini gatherings, whether in Ireland or in the UK or in Europe, for a weekend or thereabouts, and to keep things happening a little bit more. So we've been very fortunate. The German butlers have decided that they are having an international butler gathering in Germany next June for the fourth occasion. They meet every second year on average, and this is their 50th biannual family day, as they call it, Familientag. It did start in 1888, but between the First World War and the aftermath, and the Second World War and the aftermath, there were very long hiatuses. I think they didn't meet at all from about 1933 to 52, for example. But they are celebrating their 50th Familientag, or Family Day, next year, and they have decided to have a full-scale international gathering or butler rally to whom not just wearers of the butler name or people with butler ancestry, but all those who are interested in the butler history are invited. And it will run from a Tuesday evening to a Sunday evening, just like here in Ireland. So it's fantastic to have something so soon and on the cusp of our 50th anniversary or Golden Jubilee year, which is 2017, which is indeed the year of the next anticipated journal of the Butler Society, which is still welcoming articles up to about this time next year, and which will issue probably February, March 2016, 2017. So we probably have a journal launch in Kilkenny like we normally do, but there is talk of doing something in Oxford, Cambridge and or London, a weekend event, a dinner at one of the London clubs or one of the Oxford or Cambridge colleges, and a couple of excursions to areas of butler interest. And even in places like London, Oxford and Cambridge, you will find the butler influence without too much searching.
Right. The British Isles and then Ireland also contains a lot of butlers or what, in Scotland and then England proper and then Ireland and Northern Ireland even? How are they dispersed over those isles there?
Well, I think there's as many butlers in Ireland as in England, really. Perhaps there's even some more in England. I did a DNA test some years ago. We were asked to do it, and there were some packs provided to the committee as exponents of it, and I upgraded mine a little bit later and got a more fuller test done, and I think it showed that I was at that stage of the project related to more people in Britain than in Ireland, even after my ancestors being here about 800 years.
Right.
But there's a lot of butlers in Britain and Ireland, and they would be of regular farming stock, just ordinary tenant farmers, merchant shopkeepers, I would say even less than that, perhaps once upon a time labourers and so on. And everything in between, academics and people that have won and lost titles, and people that have formerly lived in castles and big houses and still live in castles and big houses, you name it, they're there. And
right.
You will see that in the membership of the society and in general life, you know. So there's not a lot of butlers in Scotland or Wales or Northern Ireland. There's quite a lot of butlers in England and Southern Ireland.
Right. How about the Norman connection? Are the butlers a Norman line originally?
Yes. It's a trade name, as you know. The name was only adopted in the very early 1200s by about 1220. Before that, it was known as Walter, and then Fitzwalter, meaning son of Walter. And one of the earliest, Theobald Walter, was a brother of the then serving Archbishop of Canterbury in England. This is in about the 1150s or 60s. And surnames were only being adopted around that time. So, saying like Theobald, son of Walter, that was how the names like Fitzgerald and Fitzwalter and Fitzgibbon and Fitzpatrick and those came into being. But Butler didn't stay with Fitzwalter, even though some of our older branches do keep that as a second or third Christian name,
right,
like Theobald Fitzwalter Butler or something like that.
Okay.
But Butler was adopted in the 1220s, and that's the earliest of the surnames. Now, when they came over, Walter would have been the surname, and going back further as Norman knights, they might have been just called like Henry of such and such or Theobald of such and such. That's how things were done in those days, like of a village or of a town or of a settlement.
Right.
So all we know is the Butlers would have come to Ireland in 1169, but they were known as Walter. They may not have been in the 1169 incursion, but certainly they were in Ireland by about 1200. Previous to that, they would have been Norman invaders of England in 1066, and previous to that, they were indeed from Normandy in France. But what a lot of people don't realize is that the Normans themselves had a lot in common with the many of the residents of the British Isles and of the Baltic states into Scandinavia from previous generations would have come from the same blood pool and the same area. Many of the Gaelic Irish and the Anglo-Saxons by the time the Normans arrived had Viking blood in them, and of course so too had the Normans. Many of them had been younger sons with less potential of property coming to them of Vikings who made their way overland or by sea down through the Baltic countries to Normandy. So they weren't a different gene pool or group, but they had a different evolution of, I guess, governance and fighting policy and so on, and they became Norman knights, whereas some of the others didn't. But, you know, there was more in common than that was held apart behind
right.
the scenes.
Well, there's just a wide swath then of butlers from common laborers to titled butlers, right? So they're all between,
yes.
in between. And even
yes,
during
yes.
the potato famine, I guess, did some of the butlers immigrate to the United States also during that period?
Yes,
or not?
But I think a lot of the butlers had actually migrated to the U.S. Before that. Yes,
in 1800s, maybe? 1800s?
Oh, much earlier.
Earlier
much
than
earlier.
That? Much earlier
yes,
than
yes.
that? Yes,
yes.
Oh, okay.
Definitely, there were butlers in what later became the United States by 1653.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
Because I had a lady submit a piece to an article.
Well,
one of the
butlers I traced back to was a next-door neighbor to Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Yes, uh-huh.
Wow.
There was a creek name in there. I don't recall it, you know. My memory's not as good as it used to be. But one of our butler line, one of the lines there of butlers was a next-door neighbor to Thomas Jefferson, in fact. And we had,
wow.
of all things, we had a George Butler in the Alamo, David.
Oh, wow.
I can't say that I'm directly connected to him, but I'll claim it. you know what I mean?
They were definitely there for generations and generations before that. There was one lady who was able to trace her ancestry that I met at a rally back to a James Butler of Auburn, Massachusetts, who was there by 1653.
My gosh.
And he probably wasn't the first. Auburn, Massachusetts, yeah. He died in the 1680s. Definitely some of the old tracing of families in the older Butler journals that we used to keep a section called Happy Families or Desperately Seeking Links. Now it's on the internet, of course. But there was quite a number of people there from before 1750 and even exceptionally from before 1700. And they were in several different religious denominations, and I would say some were Irish and some were English. Some of them, perhaps, were even part of the Puritans.
Right. The Christ Church in downtown Dublin, are the Butlers connected with that through Strongbow or anything like that or not? And did Strongbow have a connection to the Butlers or not?
Vaguely, we heard yesterday actually a little bit about that. It was actually Christ Church in Waterford. Though I'm sure they were involved in Christ Church in Dublin at some point too, but Strongbow married Aoife, who was the daughter of Dermot MacMurrough, King of Leinster, in Reginald's Tower in Waterford, and they were obviously associated with Christ Church Cathedral in Waterford too. And that family still exists today. They're one of only two former Gaelic chieftain families still living in their original house with their original property. The McMurrow Cabin is at Burris House, County Carlow. It can be Googled on the internet. Well worth looking at. Fine house. And the butler is intermarried at least three, if not four times, or the McMurrow Cabin is intermarried with the butler, depending on your viewpoint, during the 16 to 1800s period. So that is a link in that there was a marriage between Strongbow and Aoife of the McMurrows, who subsequently became McMurrow Kavanagh.
Right. Someone once wrote that the Butlers, along with three other families, there are four leading families in Ireland. Would you say the Butler family is one of the four leading families in Ireland or not?
I guess so, from a point of view of land owned and castles and houses built. From an administrative point of view, it had many of the great offices along with the Fitzgeralds. They were the top two, but I think the Butlers, certainly in the period before the early 1700s, they had it all tied up.
Okay.
After that, they backed the wrong side in 1714, 15, the Jacobite Stuart succession. And they were in the doghouse pretty much then, though they did own some property. Not all of their titles were taken from them, and they did manage to upgrade themselves from Earl to Marquess on two occasions after 1800, but never back to Duke and never back to the heights of both British and Irish office that they had up to and including 1715. But I think if you take the overall period from the 1200s to the 1900s, because certainly in the 18 and 1900s they were back as kings and queens representatives in Tipperary and Kilkenny counties, and back as serious social and cultural and political heavy hitters. They had a big legacy, no question, and quite a number of titled families. I mean, you have the Ormonds and the Dunboynes and the Glengalls and the Carricks and several earldoms and viscounties and baronies going on, even hereditary knighthoods beneath the main family at Kilkenny.
Right. Anne Boleyn, was she connected to the Butler family?
Anne Boleyn was...
Anne Boleyn,
yeah. She was born in Carrick and Shore or Ormond Castle in Tipperary, or at least, if it's not her, it's her mother. I'm struggling to remember that now. There's definitely a connection there from that end of things, yes. And as we know, she was one of the wives of Henry VIII. Yes, there is a connection. And of course, the Black Tom, the 10th Earl of Ormond, had his eye on Queen Elizabeth I. And it is said, it's very hard to be sure, but it is said that certainly Queen Elizabeth was never publicly married. Whether she was ever secretly married or not, I don't know. And she never publicly acknowledged any child, but they say that she had a period of confinement at a certain time in a certain place where it may have been possible for her to have given birth, and at the time one of the most likely, though not the only possible, father of the child was Black Tom, 10th Earl of Ormond.
Right.
And certainly he had lots of illegitimate children as well as the legitimate children. He had a wife whom he was estranged from very early on. And divorce not being possible, I think because she wouldn't give him one or something like that, he had to wait until she died. And so he was probably in his late 40s, early 50s when he married for the second time and had lots of kids. He did marry for a third time, having seen the second wife down, but he's known to have had illegitimate children, some of whom were subsequently legitimized and even titled.
Okay. This idea of British Israelism, is there any validity to that, and is there any connection of the Butler line to that at all?
I don't believe so. No, I haven't really discerned any. There could well be, but nothing obvious that I know of.
Oh, okay. Because you hear all kinds of things, don't you?
Yes.
Especially on the internet today, David.
No, we can't believe everything on the internet.
Boy, I tell you what, I read so extensively. When I went down to London, there over to London after I was over there in 2006, it was just amazing how large everything is in London, you know? I mean, the buildings and the number of buildings and the size and everything else. And it, I got on one of those little double decker buses that you can hop on and off, you know. And, but the Shakespeare's Theater there, that was the most impressive, tour that I took, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
London is a fine place and there's great history there and there's so many shops that, you know, like established 1685. There's a regalia firm there that's called Toy, Kenning and Spencer, and they're going since 1685. They were Huguenot immigrants. And then you've got Fortnum and Mason, they're going since 1707. And, I mean, you hear about places like Harrods and all that, but they're so much newer. There's even infinitely older places. There's a wonderful place there in St. James called Berry Brothers and Rudd, a wonderful wine merchant, and they're going since, I think, 1688 or something incredible like that.
My God.
The history and the continuity, no place else can compete with.
Right. What really impressed me was the number and the size of the buildings. I went to all of the tourist places, of course. I was there only a week, and you can only touch, go to a few of those places. But the National Gallery has all those Rembrandts in there and all kinds of ancient, you know, carvings and stuff like that. But it really impressed me. Now, the difference, in my opinion, though, of the Irish versus the British is the Irish – or who they say they are. Y'all are more friendly, and you know what I mean? It seems like to me, down to earth, friendly, and less structured socially. You know what I'm saying? The British, to me, seem to have a hierarchy of social levels. You know what I mean? And
well, they talk about the class system. Well, Ireland
yes,
is not
a
without
class.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Ireland is not without that. It's just done differently, I guess, you know?
Right.
It's not so much... it's not so much done in the parameters that you just mentioned,
right.
But there would be certainly a certain inquisitiveness or nosiness in Ireland as to who's who and what's what, and who would you be now, and there is a way of connecting things through without being obvious about it. In some parts of Ireland, it can be connected who you are and what you are by where you went to school or who you know or whether you knew the answer to a throwaway remark or not, or if you reacted in some way or not, but they wouldn't be using the word upper or middle or working class or anything like that. It's just done a different way. So I wouldn't say we're free of it. It's just different.
Right, right. Every culture is a little different, is it not? From country to country. Well, now, tell us a little bit about your historical geography and your lecturing on that. Are you underway with any kind of a recent research, or have you concluded some research lately, or lecturing in a particular area that interests you?
Well, I teach a course for visiting American students. We get a semester, fall semester and spring semester students each year at University College Cork. I teach a course called People, Place, and Politics, Ireland 1660 to 1960. And I teach a course then for undergraduate, final year BA geography students called Historical Geography of Transformations, Social, Cultural, and Economic of Ireland, with another lecturer colleague of mine, Ray O'Connor. Those courses are, the second one is quite recently developed. It's just in its second year. The other one is going a little longer. But a lot of my emphasis in recent years has gone on the development of an online certificate at the University of Limerick and a linked diploma, which is online in the second year at the University College Cork, in genealogy or history of family. And that's quite a growth area because it has so much in common with historical and geographical and local and regional techniques and source materials. And, of course, I had the ongoing heritage of editing the Butler Journal since about 2006. And it's quite an interlinked situation. So my work in recent times has been to develop that course and to grow the online outreach and to create networks of diaspora from the courses as the graduations go by to keep genealogy in a good shape and to the forefront of the evening course strategies at the University College Cork and the University of Limerick. And then, of course, quite a bit of my summer recess and weekend time goes every year editing the Irish Genealogist, which is the journal of the Irish Genealogical Research Society. It's going since 1936, and I'm on my probably third or fourth year as editor now. And, of course, Journal of the Butler Society, which comes out every second year.
Well, that has to be on the front page, right?
Yeah.
The Butler clan, right?
Exactly. But, you know, the Irish Genealogist has had Butler involvement, too. The late Paddy Dunboyne, who founded the Butler Society, was president of the Irish Genealogical Research Society for over a decade. And so there's quite an interest, obviously, in the family and this type of research.
Right. Well, I came up with the term social synergy a few years ago. Maybe somebody invented that term a lot further back, you know. But some of your work, does it not have to do with the synergy of different factors, cultural and political, and that affects the geography and stuff? How does that work exactly?
Well, yeah, historical geography and genealogy are exactly the same in that they both deal with not just historic and geographical sources and techniques, but things that aren't often polite conversation, like religion and politics, come into it very much. And certainly anthropology and local and regional studies. Those are the kind of the six foci as such. And it's really quite extraordinary that things that are not necessarily polite conversation, like religion and politics, albeit in the past tense, feature so strongly in historical geography and genealogy. There's a lot of emphasis, too, on visual culture, illustrations and the interpretation of them, the looking at the long period, not just confining your studies to a decade or a century, but looking at what's called la longue durée, the long period of history. For example, when I was doing my own doctoral thesis, it looked at 270 years of religion, land and rivalry, basically religion and politics, and how it played out in the county of South Tipperary from shortly after the Reformation, 1570, until shortly before the famine, 1841. And that's only something that a historical geographer stroke genealogist would attempt. A straightforward historian would
that was quite
that
a
was madness.
Quite a work, wasn't it? I mean, that took hours and thousands of hours or hundreds for sure, right?
Yeah, it took 5 years.
Took 5 years, man. Yeah. David, you're the bestest. That's what the people that I like the best, I use that bestest label, okay?
Oh, pretty good.
So, I don't know coming from me how great a compliment that is, but I've been around for a while. I'm 71 years old, and I've written a couple of books, three books actually in the last few years. And I wrote one book called Time Dynamism, followed it by a short story book on Christmas stories. And now I have out a book called Be Good to Yourself. And I talk about the delusional aspect of us not being able to grasp reality that accurately at times. But anyway, so much for that. But okay, where do you go now on the Butler rally? You have a few more days. Sunday is the last day.
We have a few more days, yeah. We were getting past the halfway point now. Before today, we were still about halfway to go.
Okay.
It opened Tuesday night with the registration and the triennial committee meeting and so forth.
Okay.
Wednesday, we were in Lisnavagh, County Carlow, which is the home of Lord and Lady Rathdonnell. The current Lady Rathdonnell was formerly a butler from Kilkenny. That's the link there. And it's a nice old 1840s Tudor Gothic residence. And we did some touring in Carlow Town nearby. And then on Wednesday evening, we had a memorial evening for the late Lord Dunboyne at Kilkenny Castle. Yesterday then, we were in a place called Borris, a little village in County Carlow, with the McMurrough Cavanagh family that we spoke about a little while ago, and had some very fine lectures on the house and contents and the family and its history with the butlers. And we went to the old medieval Loughlin Cathedral nearby, and then in the evening we went to the very nice Georgian home of the daughter of Hubert Butler, founder of our society just outside Kilkenny, Maidenhall. Today was the South Tipperary Day. We went to Clonmel, to the Episcopal Church there, Old St. Mary's. and had two fine lectures, one on the Butler Cultural or Heritage Trail of Tipperary Towns, which the Tourism County Initiative is currently developing for Clonmel, Care and Carrick and Shore towns, and will extend. And then after break, we had a nice talk on the walled towns of Tipperary, specifically Cashel, Clonmel and Carrick and Shore, and the last two would be Butler towns too. And then we had a brief tour of part of the famous Bulmer's Cider Factory at Clonmel, which I would believe is possibly exported as Magners or Bulmer's worldwide. And then on to Kilcash, which is a nice little village community where we had lunch in their parish hall, and a little talk on Kilcash Castle, which was a tower house of the family, a very important one, until it fell into ruins. The family allowed it to about 1800, but they continued to own until 1997, and the state has been restoring since, and we had an update on that. So tomorrow we have the annual Hubert Butler Memorial Lecture, which our Vice President for North America, Craig Foster, who's one of the Latter-day Saints from Salt Lake City, Utah, works at the Family History Library there, is giving on famous butlers. And then we are having a genealogical open forum and plans for the 50th celebrations of the Society up to lunchtime. And then tomorrow evening we have our gala black tie dinner in the castle, and one of our members, Sir Charles Ponsonby, is presenting some portraits of his Marcus of Ormond ancestors to the castle. And then finally, on Sunday morning, we have the service in St. Canice's and lunch, and then it's all over.
Well, you know, St. Canice, when I was over there, that service to me was the last day, I guess, of the Butler rally, but that meant the most to me. That's what it really did. That really touched me more than anything else, being there in the cathedral with all the butlers, you know. But that really did it for me. That made the trip for me, you know.
Yeah, it's a fine building, all right. No question about it. So that's kind of the most of it now. And as I say, this evening now, one is going to be heading out. We're having a little social with some of the committee and committee friends, and so I'll be heading out now shortly to get myself together to, as I say, freshen up and regroup and hit the town, and then all ready for another
day. Hit the town running, right? Well, tell Bill and Pat hello for me. Tell them I just love the heck out of them, and they're just fine people, and you are too. You're a fine person. And I want to thank you for being with us this evening, David Butler, and I want to thank you for all the hard work you've been doing with the university lecturers and also with the Butler Society. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thanks for the opportunity. All the best.
Okay, all the best to you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Good night.